Chapter 61. Inveroo Garden. My long-term plan was to become a member of the Findhorn Foundation, but I kept it quiet. To join, it was necessary to jump through a number of hoops in the form of programs that provided would-be members like me the opportunity to fully experience all aspects of community life. It also offered the membership a chance to check us out. I'd already completed Experience Week, the prerequisite to participating in any other program or workshop on offer. The next step was the week-long departmental guest program, and there were 8 of us who decided to stay on. By chance, I heard talk of a planned visit to Inveroo Garden the following day, Sunday. Foundation folk were waxing lyrical about this extraordinary garden, located on the West Coast. My interest was piqued because I found it hard to believe a subtropical garden could flourish on the west coast of Scotland, at latitude 57 degrees, beside the craggy shore of Loch Ewe, that was further north than Moscow. I wanted to be part of this excursion, because it would give me the opportunity to explore the country that I hoped would become my future home, if my master plan worked out. To get there, we climbed aboard a 20-seater bus for the 2-hour run, passing through Inverness, then Garve, the Falls of Mesac, Grunard, Alt Bay, and finally, Inveroo Garden. This garden project was the brainchild of Laird Osgood Mackenzie. It was begun in 1862, on a chunk of barren coastal land with the intention of growing as many exotic plants as possible in this unlikely place. Mackenzie's initial challenge was to create good soil in which to plant a mixture of large tree seedlings and shrubs that needed protection from the salt spray that was carried in by the fierce North Atlantic winds and storms. In the best Scottish tradition, he planned to do this by building a series of protective solid stone walls. From the outset, he imported plants and trees from all over the world, including Corsican pines, Douglas firs, Himalayan rhododendrons, Australian wallamai pines, Tasmanian eucalypts, and plants from South Africa, New Zealand and Chile. All plant species thrive at Inveroo, thanks to the influence of the North Atlantic current. The weather was perfect for our excursion. It was a clear, still day and we enjoyed the warmth of the sun on our backs, as we wandered the garden paths, flanked by herbaceous borders, all exploding with colourful summer blooms. After a splendid day in the Scottish countryside, I returned to Cluny in plenty of time for my first DG get-together that evening. In this program, we were required to do 2 3-hour work department shifts per day, Monday to Friday, and a house care shift on Saturday morning. The emphasis was placed on mindful work, as a vehicle for deeper personal awareness and understanding, whilst at the same time keeping the various foundation properties spick and span for both residents and guests. The oft-repeated mantra was, "Work is love in action." After dinner, the DG group gathered and we began our meeting with a short attunement, that is, standing in a circle holding hands with eyes closed for a couple of minutes, before concluding with a hand squeeze around the circle. The focalizer then listed the work department needs for the coming week, and after a short guided meditation, we made our selections. I chose Cluny Maintenance in the morning, and Cluny Garden in the afternoon. My second choice was prompted by the fact that it was the cultivation of gigantic vegetables that had brought this group to worldwide attention, and as a non-gardener, I hoped to pick up some useful tips. On Monday morning, I began work with Cluny Maintenance. Being a practical person with considerable renovating experience, I figured I'd fit in. We assembled in front of the maintenance shed at 8:45 for introductions, followed by a brief attunement led by one of the members, after which the tasks were listed. First, we moved a large quantity of boxed foundation calendars from one storage place to another, followed by morning tea. Next, we bucketed soil to fill a large hole, the result, we were told, of Cluny's blocked saw drama some months earlier. Just before noon, we returned to the maintenance shed to debrief and tune out, by once more standing in a circle holding hands and mentally releasing the morning's activities, concluding with a hand squeeze. After lunch, it was time for my first Cluny garden shift. We gathered outside the garden shed at 1:45. Once again, Introductions were followed by a brief attunement and an outline of the tasks to be completed. I spent the afternoon weeding a flowerbed inside the boundary hedge, at the bottom of the garden, and midway through the shift, enjoyed a welcome tea break. We regrouped just before 5 to tune out. It was strange that I was attracted to a community with strong emphasis on growing food and flowers, as I don't come from a gardening family. But I was one of many who were drawn to this place, due in part to the lingering mystique of huge vegetables grown here by the founders in the early days. So best I explain how it all began. British couple Peter and Eileen Caddy first came to northeast Scotland in 1957. They were hired to manage the run-down Clunie Hill Hotel, with Dorothy MacLean joining them as the hotel's secretary. All three had been on a disciplined spiritual path for many years. Over time, they gradually improved the facilities and the service to become a 4-star hotel, frequented by well-to-do guests, wanting to holiday in picturesque Scottish surroundings. The transformation was attributed to Eileen's practical guidance, that she received in meditation, from what she termed the still small voice within. Whatever directives she received, were immediately acted upon. Early in 1962, the trio, along with most of the hotel staff, were sent to work their magic on another hotel that was foundering, this time the very Grand Trossachs Hotel, in Perthshire. Their efforts were unsuccessful, and when they pleaded with management to return to the Clunie Hill Hotel, they were all fired. With no job and nowhere else to go, the Caddies took their three children and towed their caravan to the Findhorn Bay Caravan Park, only 5 miles from the hotel. By a strange quirk of fate, in 1975, some 13 years later, the hotel would be purchased by the foundation to provide accommodation for the stream of guests that continued to be drawn to this remarkable coexistence experiment in the back blocks of Scotland. But I'm getting ahead of myself. In 1963, an annex was added to the caravan, so Dorothy could join them. To stretch their meager unemployment benefit payments, they started a vegetable garden to increase the family's supply of fresh food, even though none of them had had previous gardening experience. But help was at hand from a most unlikely source. One day in meditation, Dorothy was contacted by what she described as the overarching deva or spirit of the green pea. After this surprising experience, she was keen to contact the devas of every other vegetable they'd planted. From that day on, the devas provided her with specific information about every aspect of the garden, including how to enrich the sandy, nutrient-depleted soil, how far apart to plant seeds, how often to water and how to remedy any other problems. Within a year, the garden around their caravan was bursting with edible life. In 1965, a BBC radio program brought the gardeners, their garden, and the 40-pound cabbages they were growing, to national attention. Horticulture experts were baffled. As word of the co-creation experiment spread across the world, people flocked to join what became and remains a successful model of sustainable food production practices, with a spiritual foundation. By the early 1970s, more than 300 people lived, worked, and researched at the foundation. Fast forward to 1984. I arrived to find that the cabbages had since shrunk to normal size. But, like hundreds of others, I'd been captivated by the strange story of humans working with the forces of nature, rather than against them. This was a revolutionary concept in the emerging age of pesticides and herbicides used to increase food production, and I, like many others, had travelled across the world to learn more. The DG program was full and exciting. Between work department commitments, I gravitated to the Clunie Library containing hundreds of spiritual books and cassette tapes of interviews with the founders and other spiritual leaders of the time. Here in the gloomy wood-panelled library space myself directed, Crash Course in Esoterics began with authors whose names began with A, with the intention of steadily working my way through to Z because I had a lot to learn, and this was the perfect place to do it. On completion of my DG week, I left the foundation to rendezvous with a romantic interest at Ayr on the Coast, south of Glasgow. Our plan was to hire a car and spend a few days traveling around Scotland. I hitched a ride to Glasgow with a member, who was returning home to visit his family. He dropped me off at the railway station, where I took the train to Ayr to meet my friend, who'd ferried across from Belfast. Little did I know at the time that the Glaswegian who drove me to the station that day would become my partner for some of the time I was at the foundation. But I'm getting ahead of myself. On reflection. Inverurgarden. The profusion of plants and colour at Inverurgarden surprised me, because I'd arrived in the United Kingdom with the preconceived belief that it was impossible to grow semi-tropical plants in the north of Scotland, because it was just too cold. What I saw at Inverurgarden clearly showed me that I needed to revise my thinking. Settling in. As it was early days at the foundation, I was keen to make new friends and there were plenty of people to choose from, members, other DGs like me, and guests. There was the occasional Australian, but it seemed we were a rare breed in this environment that was mostly filled with Britons, Americans, and Germans. I was interested in everyone, particularly the cluster of artists who lived at the park. Facts. Inverurgarden, and its collection of rare tree and plant specimens, is considered a horticultural wonder of the world, made possible by the warming waters of the North Atlantic Current, that becomes the Norwegian Current, as it flows past Inverurgarden. Laird Osgood Mackenzie was the visionary and creator of Inverurgarden. The 850-hectare estate was gifted to him by his mother in 1862. The garden now covers some 20 hectares, and has over 2,500 exotic plants and flowers. And there is a further 800 hectares of land that is managed for recreation and conservation. After the Laird died, his daughter continued his work for another 30 years. In 1952, the year before she died, she presented the garden to the National Trust of Scotland, along with a generous endowment for its future upkeep. The North Atlantic Current, also known as North Atlantic Drift, or the North Atlantic Sea Movement, is a powerful warm western boundary current within the Atlantic Ocean that extends the Gulf Stream northeastward. Davis. According to Dorothy, each Dava holds the archetypical pattern of an individual plant species. She's written numerous books about her experiences. The first one was To Hear the Angels Sing, an Odyssey of Co-Creation with the Devic Kingdom. Dorothy MacLean was born in 1920, in Ontario, Canada. After co-founding the foundation, she was invited to visit other communities across the world, to conduct workshops introducing the energies of both Davas and elementals, minerals. Before I left Australia for Scotland, I attended one of her workshops at the Relaxation Centre in Brisbane. In 1973, she returned to Canada, but, in the intervening years, she visited often. In 2009, as the only surviving founder, she returned to live at the park. She died there in 2020.